The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
Retail stress is hitting Europe's markets today as a profit warning from an online fashion retailer has investors worrying that Santa's going to leave a lump of coal in their stockings. The British retailer ASOS has warned that sales are, quote, significantly behind expectations. That's led investors to dump ASOS shares. They're down more than 40%. Taking a look at the broader markets, the FTSE 100 is rallying a bit, but it is still in the red, down 0.1%. The CAC 40 in Paris is down nearly 0.5%. In Asian trade, Singapore is the best performing market today. Actually, it's the best performer in both Asia and Europe, with the Straits Times Index closing up 1.2% at 3114. I spoke earlier with Stephen Innes. He's the head of trading at OANDA, and I asked him why Singapore is outperforming its peers.
We had such a meltdown last week that we're seeing sort of a inflection point hit the markets today. I think, one, we're starting to see some oversold positions typically get bought back in. That's the first thing. Its headline risk wasn't that dramatic over the weekend. And Singapore, again, it's more of a safe haven play because of the strong financial sectors. Those tend to support Singapore markets, even in the face of the export markets looking quite weak. You know, it's a bit of a surprise, but the way it is right now, the markets are certainly looking forward. They're certainly looking at the Central Economic Working Conference in China, and also the Fed, both of which seem to be having a soothing effect on risk today. Well, not really soothing, but at least risk is not melting down to the extent it was on Friday.
We'll get to those external factors in just a moment, but let's stick with Singapore's economy for a second. You mentioned that the non-oil domestic exports are down. In fact, they fell 4.2% in November, whereas people were expecting a 2.3% rise. So contraction versus rise, not a good thing. Yet the markets are just brushing that off.
You know, it seems to be just brushing that off because they know it's trade-related and they know it can swing as quickly as anything. There seems to be some type of light at the end of the tunnel as far as investors are concerned on this tit-for-tat tariff war, almost as if we've reached peak tariffs based on the toning down of the rhetoric coming out the U.S. administration. Whether this is misplaced optimism or not, it's yet to be seen. I'm still in the camp that we're going to see more tariffs levied by the U.S. after this 90-day moratorium, simply because I think U.S.'s position goes beyond trade and tariff. I think there's other issues at hand here, and I think the U.S. are going to play hardball.
So sticking for a moment with the Straits Times Index, it's been trading within a range. In fact, maybe traders who've been buying at 3,000, selling at 3,200 have been doing pretty well. It seems pretty much stuck in that area. Do you see it continuing to be range-bound, or is this perhaps the start of more of a longer-term rise?
I think what's happening here is the markets are just consolidating. I think we've been in this long-term consolidation pattern for a while, and I think could continue to do so over the next little while, especially as we move into the holiday season. 2019 is completely a different kettle of fish, however, because we're still waiting to really feel how the U.S. dollar is going to be reacting. That's one of the big issues right now. We look at the U.S. dollar, it's very strong, and it's strong basically for two fundamental reasons. One is acting as a haven trade because of the global meltdowns we've had revolving around trade and now potential global meltdown. And also the Federal Reserve Board has kept interest rates relatively high. We expect the Feds to continue raising interest rates. However, it's whether they pause or not in 2019. And I think if they do indicate that they're going to pause, I think that could be quite soothing for emerging market and Asian currencies in particular. We're starting to debate where the U.S. dollar is going to fall into place next year. And I think once that argument gets resolved, then perhaps we might see a bounce in local equity markets again.
Stephen, you've highlighted three issues in your note to investors today that you think the markets are focused on this week. One is the Fed, two is the trade war, and three is China's Central Economic Working Conference, which is taking place this week. Let's take each of those in turn. The Fed meets this week, and just about everyone knows or expects that it's going to raise interest rates by a quarter point. So why are we even paying attention? What can we get out of that Fed meeting? What are investors looking for?
It's sort of how they convince the markets what their position is going into 2019 and 2020. Now, Jay Powell is not a big believer of forward guidance. He's more of a, well, let's see how the data plays out. that sort of makes the debate a little bit open-ended here. All right, the data starts to ease, then the Fed will definitely move off what used to be almost calendar updates where the market was anticipating a rate hike every quarter. I still think, however, the Feds are going to continue raising interest rates. I think the U.S. economy looks quite strong. Continue to see numbers that are very, very strong. Retail sales component last week was outstanding. The only hiccups we've really seen over the last month were a slight downturn in the unemployment levels, but that wasn't really significant. A one-off issue is not that great. But one area that is of concern is the housing area. Housing continues to contract, but this could also be a function of rates going up. It's very difficult to analyze that as a one-off basis. However, the market seems to have taken a lot of the hawkishness, in other words, taken a lot of the expected rate hike in 2019 and 2020 out of the market. So this helps the Feds. So the Feds can actually just focus on delivering a very upbeat sounding statement at this FOMC meeting. And I think if they come out with an upbeat statement, along with ramming home the fact that they're going to be data dependent, I think this will be enough dovish tone to keep markets on an even keel into the new year. However, the new year is another kettle of fish, mind you, but I think it's one step at a time here. We've gone through a massive tumult in the last month or so, and the market needs some breathing room here, especially going into the holiday season.
So basically, we expect to have that quarter point rise in U.S. interest rates and then look for a statement that the U.S. economy is doing well, and we're going to follow the data to see what we do next year.
That's exactly it, Michael. And that's what we refer to in the market as a dovish rate hike. So in other words, they're going to hike interest rates. They're going to sound a little bit upbeat on the economy, but they're also going to tone down the expectations of rate hikes in the future.
Let's turn now to that second point, trade war. What is it about the U.S.-China trade war which you think investors are looking at in particular this week?
Investors have been so focused on the tit-for-tat trade war, and that's what they continue to trade off of. It's just trading on one-off events or Donald Trump tweets. I think that could be a little bit misguided. My position on this entire event here is that the U.S.'s position is always beyond tariff and trade. It's more to do with global security concerns and intellectual property theft and theft of U.S. technology know-how. So I see this as the next level of trade war. Right now, I call a tit-for-tat escalation of tariffs, which has been relatively benign compared to what this next phase could possibly be, which I'm referring to trade war two, which is a real clampdown on technology theft. And we know how far-reaching technology companies are in the markets right now and how much of a significant impact that would be globally, and especially in Asia, where a lot of manufacturing of hardware components is built. This could be really detrimental, could be a real nail in the coffin for regional markets. We're hoping, first of all, that some semblance of normalcy is going to return on the trade war front. We think that going into 2019, at least the second half of 2019, before the U.S. starts to ratchet up for the 2020 presidential election race, the trade wars will be passed. Trade war one will be a thing of memory. However, we don't know how far this escalation of technology trade war two will go on. And I think this is a big issue.
Stephen, and trade war two, I guess we're all hoping that's one sequel that will not be a hit.
Yeah, my fear there is that if we do go down that path, that it could make trade war number one, which is just basically the escalation tit-for-tat tariff, look like a game of access and allies. And this could be really, really messy affair if we get into technology warfare. It's going to be really detrimental to global economies.
Stephen, this conflict between the U.S. and China, it's not just, as you say, about trade. It's not just about deficits. In fact, it's not even just about technology. It really is about global structures and global power and the tools that countries use to shape their spheres of influence.
One of the things we're looking at here is how China's actually spreading its influence through the world, and it's through lending money. China has been in this expansionary phase of providing countries, especially in Africa, we've seen it regionally here in Sri Lanka, the detrimental effect to the country. And what happens is these poor nations fall into the trap where they're borrowing money, but they can't service. And they end up giving up property, they end up giving up sovereign rights to China, and China uses ultimately for their control. What's happened here in Sri Lanka more recently was China offered up a lot of loans to get the economy going, but also to make better bilateral trade agreements here. But then China played hardball over these payments that were getting delayed because Sri Lanka couldn't possibly service the debt to the extent that they had been indebted. So what they ended up doing was handing over the port, which was really what the money was borrowed for. And that now gives China foothold right next door to India. This is what the U.S. are looking at, how much reach China has globally.
And in this regard, Stephen, it seems that China has taken a page out of America's toolbox.
China has indeed deep, being a really good student of U.S. founding fathers. John Adams, who famously stated, there are two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. One is by the sword, and the other one is by debt. And certainly the debt side of the equation seems to be the way that China is currently exercising their power right now.
All right, let's move to that third point you mentioned earlier. The Central Economic Working Conference that's taking place in China starts tomorrow, where Chinese policymakers are going to set forward a roadmap of economic policy for the coming year. This at a time when China's retail sales, when its industrial output seem to be growing at a slower pace. What are you expecting from the CEWC, the Central Economic Working Conference, and how do you think the markets will react to it?
Well, it's interesting. The markets have stabilized ahead of it, but the markets haven't really rallied today to any significant degree. So I think the markets are very circumspect about two issues. I think they're starting to get nervous about trade. I think they're starting to get nervous about the global slowdown. And on the latter, this is where I believe this working conference is going to address. I think China is going to try and place some significant measures, whether it's fiscal or whether it's monetary. I suspect fiscal. I don't think they want to start to overly stimulate mainland economy, especially when they're still going through deleveraging policies to deflate bubbles. So I think what they're going to try to do is do it from the fiscal side, where they're going to try to put more money in people's pockets through tax cuts, and also probably ramp up infrastructure spending. It seems to be a good way that China has historically got themselves out of a downturn in the economy. One thing I don't think they're going to do is use the currency as a tool. Obviously, there's two ways you can adjust the economy. One is to, especially for an exporting nation, is to weaken the currency to trigger more exports, or one is to, you know, just stimulate the economy by pumping more dollars in, pumping more yuan into the economy. I don't think either of those options are available. I think definitely it's going to be from the fiscal side of the equation. I think it could work, but it's going to take a lot. But fortunately, the PBOC has a big war chest, and I think they're able to come up with something concrete to drive the market forward. However, I think they also want to tame the market's expectations if perhaps some of the unrealistic GDP targets that some people have might not be achievable. I think they're going to reaffirm 6.5% this year, but I think they're also going to suggest times are changing. We're actually moving out of the brick and mortar. We're moving towards a more service-oriented economy. This transition is going to take time, but eventually our GDP is going to be up there again. But in the meantime, we're still going through this economic flux.
All right. We'll be keeping our eye on that. Stephen, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We've been speaking with Stephen Innes. He's the head of trading at OANDA.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.